Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a very important show on, one that I think society is, it affects society, it affects our young people, it affects our homes and our family structure. And today we're going to have, I think, an enlightening conversation that's going to make people think, because I don't think that people have really honed in on what's going on around us. There's been a lot of movement towards science being changed. I'm a biology major, as you all know, and there are differences between males and females, and there's chromosomal and genetic differences. And there seems to be a movement towards negating that. You are what you say you are. If you want to be a woman one day, it's okay. If you want to be black one day, that's okay. And people should just acquiesce and go along with what you want. And now we're seeing a big movement towards basically changing biology of whether you're a male or a female. And this is not a story or a show about judgment. It's about facts and science. And I think that we all need to start becoming more facile with the truth, not because of someone's feelings, not because they're trying to shut you down, because facts are facts and there's nothing wrong with that. And today we're going to have a conversation with Dr. Michelle Critella. She's a pediatrician and the executive director of the American College of Pediatricians. She's the past president of ACP PEDS, or the American College of Pediatricians. She was elected board of directors in 2005. And prior to being elected president, she chaired the Adolescent Sexuality Committee, Pediatric Psychosocial Development Committee, and Scientific Policy Committee. In these roles, she became one of the chief researchers, writers, and spokespersons. And she's regularly consulted by many different platforms, including Breitbart News, One News Now, Relevant Radio, Fox News, and many others. She's peer reviewer for the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons on Issues in Law and Medicine and the International Journal of Behavioral and Healthcare Research. She serves on the advisory board of the Alliance for Therapeutic Choice and Scientific Integrity. And she's a member of the Catholic Medical Association, as well as a member of the John Paul II Academy of Human Life and the Family. She served on the board of directors of the National Association of Research and Therapy for Homosexuality from 2010 to 2015. She received her medical degree from the University of Connecticut School of Medicine, and she completed her internship and residency in pediatrics at the Connecticut Children's Medical Center in Hartford, Connecticut. She completed a fellowship in college health through the University of Virginia in 1999. She's practiced pediatrics with a special interest in behavioral health for over 15 years, and she left clinical practice in 2012 to devote more time to both her family as well as the American College of Pediatricians. So this is somebody who has a wealth of knowledge about what children think and how parents interact with children. I think we're getting so many voices from outside of the parent, people who, I think in some cases, don't even have children, who are telling everybody what they should think and how they should act. And Dr. Critella, I want to thank you so much for coming on, because this show is an important show. It's going to be sobering, but we're going to tell the truth and we're going to be empathetic to everybody. So thank you. Welcome for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on, Dr. George. It's really an honor to be here. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. You know, I found you about your work through an article that I read, and it was about gender identity. And I don't have a lot of, I'm an ear, nose, and throat, so I don't really see that a lot in my practice. But as a doctor and as a scientist, I'm starting to get concerned about what's going on in our society. I just read heard a YouTube about how there's been a movement to children, adolescents specifically, where it was 0.1% where children were confused with their gender roles or gender identity. Now it's about 2%, and it affects girls more than boys. So I want to start off there. What is going on? This wasn't something that happened when I was a child. And I'm not saying that it doesn't exist. I'm just saying it just seems to be a growth, and it seems to be something that may not be organic.
You're absolutely right. So in fact, all around the Western world, there has been an exponential increase in young children and adolescents believing that they are trapped in the wrong body. And that has been roughly over the last 10 years. In the UK, for example, there they have a single gender identity clinic that treats all minors. And so they have good statistics. They found that among among girls and teenage females, the incidence increased 4,000% within a 10-year period, which is just unheard of. You don't see that happen with a disorder that is genetic or biologically determined. You see that with disorders that are heavily determined by psychosocial influences. The increase among the boys in that population was about 2,000%. So this is a problem affecting both boys and girls, but it's impacting the girls more dramatically. And one of the theories is that this in part relates to the fact that there are sex differences between boys and girls in terms of how they respond to social media and the internet. And that a lot of the, meaning that girls tend to internalize and maybe be more sensitive to those influences, particularly as it causes them to relate to their bodies. The feeling or the sense among many psychotherapists who are concerned about this phenomenon, their theory is that a lot of these girls in the past may have simply been struggling with body dysmorphic disorder, like eating disorders, depression, anxiety. But what we saw in the mid-2000s and forward was a dramatic increase in the selling of transgenderism as normal and so-called transgender rights. And this really spread not only in, you know, academic circles, but profusely across all media platforms and in schools K through 12.
Well, actually, I have a question about that, the school's role. I've noticed that I've read about sexuality being taught from as young as kindergarten. You know, we took health when I was, I think, in 10th grade. And of course, that's, you know, you talk about sex, but how do you talk about that with a kindergartner? And you're talking about sexuality, and it seems like it's starting in a time frame that children don't even pay attention to that.
Right. So there's no more credence given to the latency period of childhood. It goes back all the way to Dr. Alfred Kinsey in the who published a book on sexuality in the human male in like 1938, and a few years later did another book on sexuality in the female. Anyway, he who was in fact a bisexual pedophile himself, but funded by the Rockefeller Institute. He was the first to propose that we are sexual from cradle to grave. And ultimately, his writing got promoted and funded not only by the Rockefeller Foundation, but he even partnered with Hugh Hefner and eventually Planned Parenthood and CECIS. And the CECIS stands for the Sexuality Information Educational Council of the United States, which is intimately involved with Planned Parenthood. And those two organizations are the chief coordinators of comprehensive sex education. So even back in the 1960s, when Planned Parenthood and CECUS first started talking about sex ed, they were talking about children being sexual from cradle forward, and were advocating for sex ed at the youngest ages. And in fact, anyone on this program can Google Planned Parenthood CECUS, which is S-I-E-C-U-S, guidelines for sex ed, and you will bring up it, and what they publish, it is available online, kindergarten through grade 12 guidelines. So for instance, at the kindergarten level, they recommend that parents and school teachers talk to kids about homosexuality, heterosexuality, just tell them outright, you know, yeah, sex is, you know, penis and vagina and various other, there is no regard for any old-fashioned norms such as psychosexual latency period of children, let alone, and it must be values neutral. Translation, you must not teach kids any Judeo-Christian sexual ethical values. You must teach it in a form that's values neutral, which of course is a farce, because if you're teaching kids that, hey, these are just body parts that can feel good when they're touched, you're really teaching them promiscuity, which is a value in and of itself. So that is what we are up against, is that those who are actually in charge of creating so-called sex education have an agenda, and it is an anti-Judeo-Christian worldview agenda. The other thing that's very important that parents or anyone who has children or grandchildren in the school system, what you have to understand is that sex education is no longer a sex ed class or health class. It is actually recommended, and this is what Planned Parenthood CECUS recommend, that it be integrated into every subject, every curriculum, and every subject in the curriculum. So they recommend that, for example, word problems in math include word problems with same-sex couples, so that these ideas get introduced in math, social studies. You know, you want to highlight LGBT people, which in point of fact, genetics, we have in 2019, a genome-wide scan was completed that definitively proved LGBT is not genetically determined. Okay, so you're not born LGBT. You are born male or female with the capacity to develop sexual attractions and engage in behaviors, including sexual behaviors. Everyone is born with that potential, but you are born male or female. That's a genetic reality. You're born with a particular ethnic background, right? We have mm-hmm. Your skin color is determined by genes alone, for example. But in terms of LGBT, that is absolutely, positively, scientifically proven to not be determined by genes alone. Nevertheless, that lie is to be taught to children from K through 12 in virtually every class, whether it's mathematics, English, social studies, science, etc. In the same way, even preschoolers, it's encouraged that preschool teachers read preschool children books, use picture books that promote the lie that you could be born in the wrong body. Read stories like I Am Jazz to preschool and kindergartners, to normalize, oh, we don't want them to be bullies. It's not about being kind. We can all teach kids to be kind without gaslighting them on the lie that they could be born in the wrong body.
It's overwhelming.
Really difficult for parents to be parents these days.
I think, what parents don't know, then they can't take their rights and their power back as parents. And, seems like a black hole when kids go to school. Parents really don't know what's going on, even if it's homeschooling. I think at one point there was I don't know who said it, but they asked the parents not to be in the room when class was going on. I think it was college class, actually. But that says to me that this is a system that is working autonomously to work against the good of the parent and the child as a unit. And on that note, let's take our first break and come back, because I want to explore the other side of this when we come back. So let's come back after our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Michelle Critella. She is the executive director of the American College of Pediatricians. Before the break, we were talking about how school has become a platform for social movements. And for, I think we're seeing this throughout the professional sports. It's just a meme where they're trying to push everybody into everybody's the same. If you have an opinion, you're somehow an outlier. You should be quashed. Your thoughts don't matter unless it's part of the whole. And I want to get back to the gender identity part of this, because what you just talked about doesn't really jibe with bringing children up. This is something that children need to make their own minds up about down the road. But if they're never given just like we're seeing now, people are being washed off the internet, scrubbed. So there's no alternative view. This view is part of making everybody part of a whole. You won't question if there's anything different because you never know. You mentioned at the beginning that there was, especially with girls, an emotional connection, like the social media, the bullying that goes on. You're not skinny enough. You're not pretty enough. And I read in this YouTube that I listened to, she mentioned that there were influencers, people who are on the internet literally saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, that your problems will go away if you transition, which is really very mercenary.
Right. That is true. So essentially, what parents need to be aware of is that they're raising children in a culture that is promoting the very dangerous lie that people can be born in the wrong body. This is absolutely scientifically false. Whether you are male or female is determined by genes, genetics alone, and that is determined at fertilization. 99.98% of all human beings in 99.98% of human beings, having a Y chromosome means that you have the genes to produce a male reproductive system. Sometimes there are males and females born with birth defects. Only 0.02% of the time will these birth defects affect the reproductive system or the genitals. So when we hear people say, oh, there's more than two sexes because there are intersex people, no. There are only two sexes, male or female. 99.98% of the time, these individuals are healthy males and females, but in that 0.02% of the time, we have some males or females with birth defects affecting the reproductive system for external genitalia. So there are only two sexes, and no one is born in the wrong body. That is so important, parents, to get through to your children at a very young age. Now, to get back to specifically what Dr. George just mentioned, many, I don't know any teenager, I mean, even, I bet Dr. George, you can even look back on your life, but I mean, I think the definition of the teen years is one of emotional ups and downs, right? Emotional angst, right? I mean, if we look at the science, we look at the psychologist, Eric Erickson, he essentially said, every teenager's psychological job is to figure out who they are. The adolescent years or teenage years are the period of time when children either solidify their identity or experience role confusion. So our adolescents are just naturally very vulnerable and impressionable, you know, vulnerable to outside influences at this time, particularly around identity formation. And now with the internet, which is completely unregulated, there are just countless adult trans activists, and even many predators who they groom these vulnerable teenagers. They groom them. They're out there. They start interacting with them in chat rooms, etc., and will literally say, oh my gosh, I felt the very same way when I was your age. Yes, all your trouble. You were born in the wrong body. Absolutely. This is your real problem. You need to embrace your true self. And if your parents, you know, you go to your parents, if you tell them that you're trans and they don't support you, though they are abusive parents, and they are telling these kids how to, you know, how to lie to counselors, doctors, to get put on hormones. Some of them even these activists / predators online. Refer to themselves as, oh, we'll be your glitter family. We'll be your new parents. We'll be your glitter family. It is truly horrific. And then on the other end of the age spectrum, of course, we have the drag queen story hours, in which many of these drag queens have been identified as child sex molesters themselves. I mean, we are truly living in an age where the lunatics are running the asylum.
I think, you know, from everything that you're saying in this open season on children, there's a connection with this, and the school is the connection, and the fact that the parents are ceding their authority to the state and to the schools, that needs to be addressed. And I think everybody needs to take responsibility. I don't believe this would have happened had the parents been a lot more involved in what's going on in their school and with their children. And I think the internet obviously is a major player on this. Let's take our second break, because I want to pick that thought up, because I think it's important. I'm about personal responsibility. And now that now that you're here and you're speaking on this, and people are now going to become aware, we need to talk about how we fix this and solutions. So let's talk more when we come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Michelle Cretella. Again, she's the Executive Director of the American College of Pediatricians. And people can go, you have a website, don't you, that people can go to see what the Academy does?
Yes. Before the break, you mentioned we want to talk about solutions.
Yeah.
And so I urge your listeners to go to bestforchildren.org, bestforchildren.org. And in the search box, you can type in transgender issues, and that will take you. We have a page that is dedicated to gender identity confusion and transgender. And on that page, we do have a link that says, we have a heading that says resources for parents, and there is a transgender guide. So the transgender guide on our gender identity issues page is extremely helpful. It's geared toward parents, and it educates you about the true facts and what you will be up against in school. The Family Policy Alliance is also an ally of ours, and they have a parent, it's called Parents Go Back to School, and their handbook, so that's Family Policy Alliance, they have a handbook for parents about all the dangers that can be found in schools, including but not limited to the gender identity issue. So they are another really great resource for parents. So the first part of the solution is, as you said, personal responsibility, reclaiming our authority as parents and educating ourselves. So you get the documents that contain the true science and what health really looks like. And then, just as important, you need to have conversations with your children's teachers. You need to start finding out what really is going on in your child's individual classrooms. And many parents, that was maybe one silver lining of COVID, when we started having classes online at home, many parents were shocked because they would walk in on classes and were hearing some rather strange content for the first time, you know. Mm-hmm. But that is where to begin. In some situations, I mean, my husband and I have four children. Our two youngest are now in high school, and I am still able to have conversations about various topics that, you know, we have very good open communication with our kids. And if something funky is introduced, you know, as an example, my sophomore daughter is in honors English this year. And out of the blue, all parents received an email to say, oh, just letting you know, we have a brand new honors English curriculum for our sophomores this quarter. We're going to be studying public health. And I predicted the very next line. We're going to be having our English students research the ethics of vaccine mandates.
Wow.
So I know her teacher. On a first name basis, I said, hi, Melissa, will you please send me your materials for the first class and all of them thereafter? Because it was a little too late. They were announcing it. Like, there was no way that parents could, you know, it's like, oh, the quarter starts. They're giving us the email, the notification on Friday, and the quarter starts Monday.
Wow.
So the best you can do as parents is, like, be abreast of what's coming and have go through the assignments with your child, have the conversation. So the very first assignment for the very first day was to do some selected readings by utilitarian philosophers. And then the homework assignment was something known as the trolley problem. In the trolley problem, and the kids had to write an essay justifying what they would do and why. And in the trolley problem, you are you're just outside, and all of a sudden, what you see is there's this runaway trolley, and if you allow it to continue down the track, it's going to potentially take out five people. You can flip the switch and make it go down another track, and it could potentially kill one person. What do you do? So I picked up the phone again when I saw that. I said, Hi, Melissa. I'm deeply concerned that you are, that merely allowing the kids to read this is introducing the idea that it's sometimes necessary and morally acceptable to do something that could cause, that could result in the death of innocent life or the killing of innocent life. And that led to a very good conversation in which I said, so here's what I'd want you to do. I want you to make sure when you discuss this, that you point out there is a pro-life way to interpret this ethical dilemma. And the pro-life way to interpret it is this way. There is nothing morally evil about flipping a switch on the track. So these kids are not intentionally choosing to kill anyone, mm-hmm. number one. Number two, we don't know the status of those five people. If those five people over there are gymnasts, maybe they can all jump out of the way, right? So likewise, maybe the single person on the other track, we don't know, maybe that's somebody in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. So I said, what I want you to point out as a teacher is that this that you could really fill in your own details, and whatever you're choosing to do with that switch, you are choosing to save, to preserve life.
Right.
Okay? That's what I want you to do, because otherwise this is being presented to them as, oh, look, sometimes you do have to choose to kill somebody. And mm-hmm. that is not objectively what they're doing. I mean, so this is the crazy, I mean, this is what you have to do sometimes as mm-hmm. a parent. If you can't stop your child from being, from having their mind and their value, their mind manipulated and their values eroded, you as parents need to do the research and counter it, you know, and of course, I mean, I didn't just have the conversation with my child's teacher. I had the conversation with my daughter. But it's
important. And it's, it reminds me of you going back to basics. You really almost have to pre-treat your children. So yeah. They actually have a frame of reference, a moral compass, right. a, mm-hmm. you know, a boundary. That they know, hey, this is bumping up against it. I'm not going there. Or I'm going to tell my parents or something where they have some sort of, you know, help. And, you know, going.
So I want to tell you, I'm sorry to.
That's okay.
I'm thinking about your, this is a wonderful show about solutions. For parents of young children, go to Amazon.com and purchase the book, I Don't Have to Choose. I Don't Have to Choose. It is a beautiful book for preschoolers, kindergarten, even elementary students that just goes through the facts about biological sex in a very enchanting way and gets girls and boys to understand, hey, if just because I'm a girl who breaks sex stereotypes, just because I'm a girl who likes to climb trees and play in the mud, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I'm still a girl, right? So I Don't Have to Choose is saturated with science as well as being just an engaging story with beautiful pictures. For tweens and teenagers, I recommend it's a tween and teen novel called Choosing. And again, packed with loads of scientific facts as well as compassion. And it follows I think she's, I can't remember if she's about 14 years old in the story, but it follows one main character, a girl with her circle of friends and how they navigate, how she navigates bumping up against the transgender propaganda in her family and in her school. You Don't Have to Choose and Choosing are excellent books for parents to read first and then to share with their kids.
You know, what strikes me is that it's counterintuitive that the people who are pro transgender movement and cross-sex hormones are actually taking away children's choice. And this should always be about choice. And you just described beautifully. Not everybody fits in a cookie cutter paradigm. So if you like to wear pants, if you like to play with, you know, whatever, that doesn't mean that you don't believe you're in the right sex. And they're just assuming and pushing people into these boxes that it's the actual opposite of this. And I want to take our last break and come back, because I think we do need to parents need to understand that there are consequences for having your child go through this. And I don't know if parents actually know that. So let's talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Living the Solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. Again, we're speaking with Dr. Critella. And, you know, before the break, this is such a short show in some instances. I definitely want to get to the consequences. We've talked about the school promoting an agenda. We've talked about parents being locked out. We've talked about children not getting a full complement of choice and getting pushed into a mindset that promotes this bigger agenda. What happens when a child is on a puberty blocker or cross-sex hormone? I know that they can get them in some instances. I visited in Seattle, they can just walk in and get them without a parent consent, right? So what happens to them? What's the side effect? And what happens if they change their mind down the road?
Right. Okay. All great. So real quick, parents need to know that in the state of Oregon, children as young as 15 can actually be put on Medicaid and get any of these puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and even surgeries paid for by Medicaid. So state of Oregon, 15-year-olds are essentially treated as emancipated adults and basically chemically and surgically mutilated on the taxpayer dollar. Now, everywhere else around the country, parents need to understand you do not need to go to a gender clinic. Any nurse practitioner, physician, anyone who can prescribe medications who is also convinced of this transgender ideology can prescribe for your child. And surprise, surprise, it is very profitable, which is why Planned Parenthood clinics engage in this. They're not just about abortion anymore. They are also putting youth on cross-sex hormones. Okay, so what's the big deal? Why should we be concerned? So number one, when any child is told the lie that they could be born in the wrong body, that is going to make it very difficult. If they're already confused, it's going to make it more difficult for them to embrace their bodies, just psychologically speaking. And so what currently happens is when you have a child that who is confused about his or her body, who goes to a pediatrician, most most in mainstream medicine, sadly, are being forced to accept this ideology or have fallen for it, will say, oh, your child's 8 years old. Between the ages of 8 and 12, we can put them on puberty blockers and maybe to give them a little more time to decide if they are trapped in the wrong body or not. This is just so insane. No physician, no bio major should have those words come out of their mouth, right? That you might be trapped in the wrong body. That's science fiction. Nevertheless, when you take a physically healthy child and stop their puberty, you're giving them a disease. Okay, puberty is a critical developmental stage during which they are going to go through some of the most rapid brain, bone, physical, and psychosocial development ever. And you are stopping that. And as long as they're on that puberty blocker, you're stealing those years of a critical developmental phase away from them. So what happens if you put a child on puberty blockers? During that time, their peers are going through growth spurts. You know, boys, the little boys are growing more masculine. Their muscles are getting larger. Their shoulders broader. The boys on puberty blockers, no. Girls will not develop, their breast development will not occur. Normal brain organization is not able to occur because that requires puberty. So children who are put on puberty blockers never attain the bone strength, the bone density that they otherwise would have attained in adulthood. So there are cases of young women who basically have the bones of 80-year-olds. They're going through they're having fractures, osteoporosis and bone fractures that should not be seen in your 20s. That's happening. The worst, and this happens in boys as well, the bone density does not reach normal. But the most dangerous consequence of going on puberty blockers followed by cross-sex hormones is that the children will become permanently sterile. The puberty blockers prevent the testicles from maturing in the boys, so they never develop mature sperm. The puberty blockers prevent the development of the ovaries and prevent the development of mature eggs in the girls. Now, while they're on the puberty blockers, virtually all kids who are put on puberty blockers will decide that they are transgender. And somewhere between the ages of 13 and 16 will be put on the cross-sex hormones. Once that takes place, the cross-sex hormones, for boys, they're given estrogen. That shrivels whatever they had left of their testicles. And the testosterone given to the girls with the puberty blockers destroys their ovaries. So should these children later embrace reality by some miracle, like say in their mid-20s or late 20s, they'll be infertile.
Do they know this?
Yeah.
That's my question. I mean, informed consent is one of the major players in healthcare, and it's being washed away as we speak. Are they getting, the parents and the child, given the full consequence of what they're doing, potentially?
Among those, so the gender clinics pretty much have a boilerplate informed consent, which says, oh, well, you know, here are the possibilities. You know, we really don't have any long-term studies on this. And you know, we're stopping your puberty. Infertility infertility and sterility are risks. Suffice it to say, what parents are being told, those negatives are being downplayed, and parents are literally being told, if you don't do this, your child will commit suicide. They are being told that the standard of care for gender identity incongruence or dysphoria is what it's called, gender identity incongruence or dysphoria. The parents are being told this is standard of care. The standard of care is to transition your child to live as the opposite sex, socially and medically. So parents are being bullied, frightened, and gaslit almost at the same level as the kids. And in some cases, when you're not apart from, so the gender clinics have this boilerplate informed consents that get signed. However, I have been told by young adults who have since detransitioned that, you know, they went to folks in their, to physicians in their community and never received anything like that. Oh, no, I went to a therapist and she referred me for hormones after one session. And
one session, you know, one session. How do you even know somebody?
In some cases, counselors are, yeah, they're referring these kids for hormones after one session. It's
like a pipeline.
It's like
follow the money too. This is a money-making venture like you described. Planned Parenthood doesn't do anything for free. You know, they're getting something for it. And it's like a win-win for the entire system. So I have a question about the teachers, because I remember when I was, I think about 10 or 15 years ago, there was a big movement on people getting put on ADD drugs because the teacher diagnosed them in the class. Is that also something happening with this, that teachers are getting involved in referring kids for this?
We may see more of that growing, because in 2016, between 2014 and 2016, then President Obama came out with his Dear Colleague letter to school superintendents and school districts. And in that Dear Colleague letter, he basically said, unscientifically, that sex in Title IX, sex means gender identity. And that if schools did not treat gender identity the same way they treat sex, they may lose federal funding. Now, there was no force of law to that, but that was, that Dear Colleague letter is when activists at the school level really took off and started implementing Department of, and you should go to your state Department of Education websites to see if you can find this, but the majority of state departments of education from that point forward have told teachers and have it written out in policy that if a child expresses a different gender identity to you, you may not share that with the child's parents unless the child gives you permission. And we do have there are anecdotal cases for sure of teachers and or counselors at school, going along with a child's different gender identity without the parent's knowledge. And it's not a far stretch. I could see down the line this becoming an issue, just as we saw with the ADHD situation, where we have teachers making the diagnosis and telling parents, hey, you need to take your child to the doctor because, you know, they're trapped in the wrong body. You know, with ADHD, it's, hey, you have to take Joey to the pediatrician because he can't sit still and clearly has ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he can't come back to class unless he does, you know, is on medication.
That is definitely within the realm of possibility.
Wow. You know, our show goes so quickly. There's so much more I wanted to explore with you, and I have to have you come back so that we can do it. But how can people reach you and learn more about the American College of Pediatricians, which is different from the American Academy of Pediatrics, just so we make that very clear?
Yes, yes. The American Academy of Pediatrics is 110% behind teenagers getting double mastectomies if they think they're in the wrong body, while in the same breath warning parents that, hey, you shouldn't let your teens get tattoos. So the American College of Pediatricians, go to bestforchildren.org, and please surf our website. As I say, you can go to our, we have a section dedicated to sexuality as well as gender identity issues. There are videos and resources there. So bestforchildren.org, and I can be contacted through the website as well.
Dr. Cotella, thank you so much for coming on. It was an absolute pleasure. I learned a lot, and I know my listeners did too. This is a tough subject, but it should always be about as much knowledge as you can get in order to make an informed choice and to take your power back whenever possible, as a child and especially as a parent. So thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I would come back in a heartbeat.
Oh, thanks. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.